of New Orleans, the city of jazz, Gumbo, and now a mayoral soap opera that could make even the most cynical among us throw up our hands in despair. LaToya Cantrell, the first female mayor in New Orleans' 300-year history, is marking her exit with an indictment for conspiracy, fraud, and obstruction. A romantic subplot straight out of a tawdry novel has come to life as she allegedly engaged in a clandestine affair with her bodyguard. Because why not mix business with pleasure when taxpayers are footing the bill? Cantrell's partner in crime, or should we say alleged partner in crime, Jeffrey Vapa, is accused of being paid while wining and dining on taxpayer dollars. The duo reportedly exchanged over 15,000 encrypted messages through WhatsApp because nothing screams innocent like using an app known for its disappearing messages. And of course, they claim their relationship was strictly professional. Right. The indictment paints a picture of deception more tangled than Mardi Gras beads after a storm. They traveled far and wide, from Scotland to Martha's Vineyard, on trips conveniently disguised as official duties but allegedly serving as personal escapades instead. All this while Cantrell preached about crime reduction on social media until she went radio silent mid-July. Yet somehow, amidst this circus act, Cantrell's supporters cry foul play against her as a black woman facing disproportionate scrutiny compared to male counterparts. Meanwhile, acting U.S. Attorney Michael Simpson dismisses these claims faster than you can say public corruption, insisting it's all about betrayal of public trust. This isn't New Orleans' first rodeo with scandal. Let's not forget former Mayor Ray Nagin, who took home 10 years behind bars for his own creative interpretation of ethical governance. So here we are again, another chapter in Louisiana's illustrious history of political malfeasance. In the twilight months before she leaves office due to term limits and perhaps impending legal battles, Cantrell finds herself isolated from former allies and embroiled in bitter feuds with city council members who've already clipped her wings through charter changes aimed at curbing her authority. Is there any hope left? Maybe if you squint really hard through rose-colored glasses while sipping on some overpriced vineyard wine. Otherwise, welcome back to reality where absurdity reigns supreme, and accountability is just another word in the dictionary, collecting dust alongside integrity and honesty.
Welcome to another episode of First World Problems, where we tackle the most pressing issues that only people with too much time and too little perspective could possibly care about. Today, we're diving into the Trump administration's latest attempt at a health initiative: Make America Healthy Again. Because apparently, making America great again wasn't quite enough. The administration has decided to address chronic diseases among children by doing nothing aggressive about pesticides or ultra-processed foods. Yes, you heard that right. The plan is essentially to tell farmers, hey, maybe use less poison, while giving a thumbs up to snack companies for their continued contributions to our waistlines. It's like telling someone who's drowning in debt to just stop buying yachts. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., leading this charge, or perhaps more accurately, this gentle nudge, has railed against ultra-processed foods and over-prescription of medicine. But when it comes down to it, the draft report stops short of actually recommending anything substantial. It's like complaining about your neighbor's loud music but refusing to call the cops because you don't want any drama. The MAHA Commission will focus on awareness campaigns around Whole Foods instead of cracking down on those delightful snacks that come in neon colors and have shelf lives longer than most marriages. I mean, who needs regulation when you can just tell people that kale exists? And then there's the part about defining ultra-processed foods. Because if we can't solve the problem, let's at least define it properly. Maybe next they'll launch a campaign on how many licks it takes to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop. Meanwhile, hundreds are signing letters urging President Trump not to shield pesticide manufacturers from lawsuits linked to their products causing cancer and liver disease. Because obviously what America really needs is more chemicals in its diet, not fewer lawsuits holding companies accountable. In another stroke of genius, they're planning an education campaign aimed at improving fertility, because clearly what we need is more humans consuming these questionable food products without fear of consequence. And let's not forget the plan for an AI-driven tool for pediatric cancer research, a noble cause buried under layers of bureaucratic jargon and vague promises. If only they could program AI to make sense of this entire initiative. So there you have it. Make America Healthy Again. Brought to you by an administration that's mastered the art of saying plenty while doing very little. In a world where real problems exist, it's comforting, or maybe concerning, to know we've got first world problems keeping us entertained.
In today's episode of The Daily Dose of Dystopia, we witness the latest chapter in the ongoing saga of President Trump's grand vision for a leaner, meaner government machine. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, once a stalwart defender against predatory banking practices, is now being downsized to near non-existence. Because who needs consumer protection when you can have unchecked financial chaos? The administration's strategy is as subtle as a sledgehammer. Replace the agency's director, cancel its headquarters lease, and cut more than 80% of its workforce. It's almost like they're trying to set a new high score for dismantling public services. But fear not, dear citizens. The appeal score assures us that some functions, like responding to consumer complaints, will remain intact. After all, someone has to answer the phone when you're on hold for eternity. Judge Greg Katsas and Judge Naomi Rao, both Trump appointees, have decided there's no formal decision to shut down the CFPB entirely. Apparently, the lack of a memo makes it all okay. Meanwhile, Judge Nina Pillard reminds us that this move might just undermine our quaint notions of constitutional separation of powers and governance bylaws. But let's not get bogged down in legal mumbo-jumbo or pesky constitutional principles. Instead, let's applaud this bold step towards a future where agencies are gutted before they even know what hit them. A thrilling prospect for those who dream of living in an unregulated wonderland. So while appeals continue and legal decisions loom on the horizon, remember that we're witnessing history in the making. The slow unraveling of consumer protections, one court ruling at a time. And if things go awry, well, at least we'll have front row seats to watch it all unfold with an ironic chuckle or two.
Welcome to the Existential Crisis Hour, where we ponder the absurdities of human existence and laugh at our own futility. Today's topic, the curious case of the Biggest Loser and its impact on our collective psyche, courtesy of an article from CNN titled, Remember the Biggest Loser? A new docuseries explores the harm the show did in the name of health. Ah, reality TV, a genre that promised us a glimpse into authentic human experience, but instead delivered a buffet of contrived situations and questionable life lessons. In this particular circus, contestants willingly starved themselves for entertainment while audiences cheered them on from their couches, possibly with a bowl of popcorn in hand. Irony. Thy name is The Biggest Loser. The series was a spectacle of endurance, with contestants pushing their bodies to extreme limits. 8 hours of exercise a day, why not? After all, who needs knees when you can have fleeting fame and a temporarily smaller waistline? And let's not forget the calorie restrictions that bordered on medieval torture methods. But hey, anything for ratings. In pursuit of health, or at least what passed for it in prime time, the show inadvertently highlighted how little we understand about well-being. As Skye Borgman, director of the Netflix docuseries exploring this phenomenon, notes, everyone wants a magic bullet for weight loss. The catch? Magic bullets are as real as unicorns or politicians who keep their promises. But what did viewers really learn from this televised marathon of sweat and tears? Perhaps it was that losing weight is easy if you're willing to sacrifice sanity and self-respect on national television. Or maybe it taught us that Schadenfreude pairs nicely with commercial breaks. Yet beneath the surface lies an existential question. Why do we find amusement in others' struggles? Is it because deep down we're relieved it's not us gasping for air on those treadmills? Or perhaps it's because watching someone else suffer allows us to ignore our own existential dread, at least until the credits roll. And then there's the aftermath. Contestants regaining weight faster than you can say metabolic slowdown. Despite Herculean efforts during filming, many found themselves back where they started once real life resumed. It turns out biology doesn't care much for reality TV's narrative arcs. So here we are left pondering whether any lasting change came from these televised trials by fire, or if they merely reinforced society's obsession with appearance over substance. Did The Biggest Loser advance conversations around body image or simply perpetuate harmful stereotypes? As humans navigating this absurd world filled with contradictions and commercial breaks, perhaps all we can do is chuckle at our shared follies and hope tomorrow brings more clarity than today's reruns offer. Join us next time on the Existential Crisis Hour as we continue exploring humanity's quirks through dry humor-infused lenses. Because sometimes laughter truly is medicine, even if it doesn't burn calories quite like 8-hour gym sessions might suggest.
In this fevered landscape of unchecked capitalism, the pursuit of profit has reached new heights of absurdity. Eli Lilly, a stalwart in the pantheon of pharmaceutical giants, embarks on a bold venture to rebalance drug prices across continents. The method? Jack up prices in Europe under the guise of fairness, all while maintaining their stranglehold on American consumers. The weight loss drug Mounjaro becomes a pawn in this grotesque game. A 170% price hike in the UK serves as an offering to appease the relentless demands from President Donald Trump. His administration's pressure for lower domestic drug prices is nothing more than a smokescreen. It promises little relief for Americans already drowning in healthcare costs. Eli Lilly's justification rings hollow, aligning global contributions to innovation costs, a euphemism for squeezing every possible penny out of desperate patients. Worldwide, the NHS remains untouched, allowing public perception to remain unblemished while private suppliers scramble to negotiate discounts. An illusion of choice and competition that masks the grim reality. Meanwhile, Trump's crusade against foreign freeloaders paints a dystopian picture where nations are pitted against each other in a race to fund American innovation. His executive order seeks harmony between European and U.S. drug prices, but offers no solace for those burdened by exorbitant costs at home. This capitalist fever dream reveals itself as companies like Eli Lilly dance to the tune of political puppeteers, exploiting international markets under the pretense of fairness and equity. The result? A world where pharmaceuticals become luxury commodities accessible only to those who can afford them, a testament to society's willingness to sacrifice health at the altar of profit. As we witness these machinations unfold, one can't help but wonder if this is what progress looks like. A relentless pursuit of wealth that leaves humanity gasping for breath amidst rising tides of inequality and despair.